All right, so welcome back to the deep dive.
Great to be back.
You know, today we're going to be looking at something,
Okay.
it's kind of a blast from the past,
Oh, cool.
almost 100 years ago,
Wow. Okay.
a case called Kearns v. Ondrej.
All right, I've heard of that one.
It's from 1928.
Okay.
And you know, it really highlights what can happen when a deal goes south
Right? Yeah.
and the terms are all messed up.
Ah, yeah, it's so important to get that right from the beginning.
It really is.
Yeah.
And you know, we're going to look at this case in particular,
Okay.
but it should resonate with anybody out there who's ever, you know, entered into an agreement.
Right, especially like big ones like real estate.
Huge, yeah, like buying a house
Yeah.
or even smaller things, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
But think about it. Have you ever, you know, made changes based on like a handshake deal or maybe even spent money
Yeah.
thinking everything was solid,
Right.
only to have that rug pulled out from under you?
Oof. Yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah, and then you're left wondering, well, can I actually recoup those costs, you know?
Right. Can you get that money back,
Right.
even though the agreement wasn't like legally binding?
Exactly, and that's exactly what happened in Kearns v. Ondrej.
So that's what we're diving into today.
It is.
That's excited.
Yeah, so we're using the actual court documents and
All
findings to
right.
really unpack this whole situation.
Perfect.
So let's set the stage.
Okay.
We're in 1920s Connecticut.
Right.
Mr. Kearns, he wants to sell his house.
Okay.
Mr. Ondrej, he wants to buy it.
Makes sense.
They come to this like verbal agreement
Okay.
for $8,500.
So far, so good.
Right. Sounds straightforward enough. But here's
Yeah.
the thing.
What's that?
As the case later shows, their agreement, it's missing some really important pieces.
Well, like what?
Like some really basic stuff.
Okay.
Like they didn't specify the exact boundaries of the property.
Oh, wow. So, like, what land was actually included in the sale?
Exactly.
That's pretty big detail to leave out.
Huge, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the mortgage situation.
Okay.
Andre was supposed to take over the existing mortgage,
Right.
but they never talked about like who the lender was,
Oh, wow.
the interest rate, the
Yeah.
repayment terms.
So basically all the essential mortgage details.
It was all really vague.
That's not good.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
But even with all these missing pieces,
Oh.
Andre, he starts acting like the deal is happening.
Oh, really? What did he do?
He even asks Kearns to like remove some trees from the property.
Interesting.
So Kearns thinks, okay, this is a go.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it.
He starts doing the work, spending his own money
Oh boy.
based on Andre's requests,
Okay.
and then bam,
What happened?
Andre backs out.
Oh
He
no.
changes his mind.
Wow. So now Kearns is out all that money and effort.
Right. And not only that,
What else?
Kearns eventually finds another buyer,
Oh, okay.
but he has to make even more changes for this new buyer,
Like what kind of changes?
like repainting, repapering.
Oh, jeez. And he ends up selling the house for less.
Oh, that's rough.
$8,250.
Less than the original agreement with Andre.
Exacta.
So he's losing money left and right.
Exactly. So now Kearns is out the difference in the sale price,
Right.
plus all the money he spent on those alterations.
This doesn't sound fair at all.
No, it doesn't.
So what happened next? Did he take Andre to court?
He did.
Okay.
And
But that's where things get really interesting.
all right, I'm all ears.
So the court, they had to figure out, why couldn't Kearns just sue Andre for breach of contract?
Right, that seems like the obvious move.
You would think so, right?
Yeah.
But the court said no,
Why not?
because that initial oral agreement,
Yeah.
it wasn't actually a legally enforceable contract.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, and there were a couple of reasons for this.
Okay.
First, remember all those missing details we talked about?
Right, like the property boundaries and the mortgage terms.
Exactly. The court said the agreement was just too indefinite.
And then there's this thing called the statute of frauds.
Okay, what's that?
Well, in a lot of places, the law requires contracts for the sale of land to be in writing.
Oh, so like a written contract.
Yeah, to be legally binding.
That makes sense.
So the fact that Kearns and Ondrej only had a verbal agreement, that
Yeah.
made it even weaker legally.
So no written contract, no clear terms.
No dice.
Wow. So what could Kearns do?
Well, he had to find another legal avenue
Okay.
to try to recover his
All right, so
costs.
what do you do?
This is where we get into this concept of quasi-contract.
Okay, quasi-contract. I'm not familiar with
It's
that.
also known as unjust enrichment.
All right, break that down for me.
Okay, so basically, a quasi-contract, it's like a safety net
Okay.
when there's no valid contract, but one party, they've benefited unfairly.
At the expense of the other party.
Exactly.
Okay, so how did that apply to Kearns?
Well, the court had to decide, even though that house sale agreement wasn't solid. Could Kearns still get some money back from Andre?
For all those changes he made.
Right, because Andre specifically asked for them.
That's a good point.
And the trial court initially, they sided with Kearns.
Did.
They said, yeah, the contract's void.
Right.
But Andre did ask for those changes.
Yeah.
And Kearns, he acted on that request.
He did.
So they awarded Kearns some compensation.
Oh, interesting.
Not just for the trees and the changes Andre requested, but also for the repainting and repapering.
For the second buyer?
Yeah.
Wow. So he got everything.
Well, not quite.
What happened?
Andre appealed the decision.
Oh, of course he did.
And the case went to the Connecticut Supreme Court of Errors.
Okay. So what did the Supreme Court say?
Well, they agreed that the initial oral agreement wasn't enforceable.
Right.
But they narrowed the scope of what Kearns could recover.
Oh, how so?
They said, okay, he can get some compensation, but not for the changes made for the second buyer.
Oh, so just the stuff Andre specifically requested.
It's exact.
That's a really important distinction.
It is.
So why did the Supreme Court make that distinction?
Well, they zeroed in on this concept of reliance.
Oh, right. We talked about that earlier.
Yeah. They said Kearns made those changes in good faith.
Believing the deal was going through.
Right. And he only did them because Andre asked.
And that created an expectation of payment.
Exactly. And this is where we get that great quote from Justice Maltby.
Okay. What did he say?
He said, and I quote, "The attempted contract is of no consequence save as it shows the expectation of compensation."
Wow. That's a mouthful.
It is, right?
But what does it mean?
Well, basically he's saying, even though the contract itself couldn't be enforced, the fact that they tried to make a contract shows that both Kearns and Andre understood that Kearns expected to be paid.
For his work.
For his work.
Right. He wasn't just doing it out of the goodness of his heart.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does, right?
So it's not always just about having a formal contract.
Sometimes it's about that expectation of payment.
Right. Like if you're doing something for someone based on a verbal agreement and you're expecting to be paid.
Right.
And then things fall apart.
It's not always a lost cause.
That's an important takeaway for sure.
It is.
So, but back to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
They said no compensation for those changes made for the second buyer.
Right.
Why not?
Because those changes weren't made at Andre's request.
Oh, okay.
They weren't directly tied to that initial agreement with Andre.
So it was like a separate deal entirely.
Exactly.
So the court was really focused on those actions.
Yeah.
That Kearns took in direct reliance on what Andre asked him to do.
It wasn't about whether Andre benefited or not.
Interesting.
Because he didn't end up buying the house.
Right.
But he did make those requests.
Yeah.
And Kearns relied on those requests.
And that's what mattered to the court.
Exactly.
So this whole case, it's not just about real estate gone wrong.
No, it's about a bigger principle.
Okay.
It's about the legal system trying to protect people.
Okay.
Who act reasonably.
Yeah.
Based on someone else's request.
Even if there's no formal contract.
Right. It's about fairness.
Oh, that's a good point.
And this applies to all sorts of situations.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Like small service requests.
Okay.
Or even preliminary business discussions.
Yeah. So what's the takeaway for our listeners?
Well, first off, get it in writing.
Always.
Especially for big deals.
Huge deals, like buying a house.
Right. Don't just rely on a handshake.
Make sure you have a clear written contract.
Yeah.
With all the details spelled out.
Who's doing what, when, where.
And for how much.
Exactly.
Because ambiguity can lead to problems.
Big problems.
Costly disputes.
Right.
But there's another important takeaway here.
What's that?
Even if an agreement isn't perfect.
Okay.
You might still have some legal recourse.
If you acted in good faith.
Yeah. And you can show that you relied on the other person's requests.
And that you suffered a loss.
Right. The court might be able to help you recover your costs.
Yeah.
So it's a good reminder that even in informal situations, it's important to be clear about expectations.
Absolutely. And document everything.
Always a good idea.
So think about it this way.
Okay.
You have a friend who wants to buy your car.
Right.
But only if you fix the transmission first.
Okay.
You spend $500 to get it fixed.
Yeah.
And then they back out of the deal.
Oh, that's a bummer.
It is, right?
So can you get your money back?
Well, you probably couldn't force them to buy the car.
Right.
Especially if you didn't have a formal written agreement.
Yeah.
But based on this case, you might have a good argument to recover that $500.
For the transmission repair.
Right, because you acted based on their request.
I
saw. So you wouldn't get the profit from the car sale.
But you could recoup your expenses.
Exactly.
That's helpful.
It is.
So to sum it all up,
yeah.
Even when a contract falls apart,
yeah.
The law recognizes the importance of good faith.
And reliance.
Right.
You might not get everything you hoped for.
But you might be able to recover your costs.
Yeah.
So this raises an interesting question.
What's that?
In today's world, where a lot of agreements start informally.
Like emails, texts.
Exactly.
How much responsibility does each party have?
To make sure things are clear.
Yeah, and formalize.
Before anyone takes any action.
Right, it's a balancing act.
Between convenience and risk.
Definitely something to think about.
For sure.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive.
It really has.
Into Kearns v. Andre.
A case from almost a century ago.
But still relevant today.
Absolutely.
So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you next time on the Dick Dive.
See you then.